It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. We chose a topic for today's show that I knew absolutely nothing about, trap shooting. So I decided I'd better give it a try. And on Tuesday, I met with one of our guests at the Birchwood Shooting Park and got a lesson in how to blast clay pigeons with a shotgun. And I'm here to tell you, it is fun and practically addictive. We got the idea for the show because of the success of Alaskan shooters at the national and international level. Corey Cogdell learned to trap shoot at Birchwood and went on to win a national championship and an Olympic medal. Similar to Nordic skiing, the Alaskan way of life seems to make us particularly competitive in shooting. So our topic today is trap shooting, what it is, how to do it, and why Alaskans are so good at it. And I have two guests in the studio who are both involved with the organization here in Alaska, the Alaska State Amateur Trap Shooting Association. Jen Geary, thanks for being with us. And Dave Kaiser, who was my my teacher on Tuesday, and a very skilled teacher, very good at breaking it down, and I'm not sure that I'm particularly good at it. Maybe if I kept working, I would be.
Well, you broke the first target you ever shot at, so.
Yeah, I did hit the first one, but I noticed I wasn't standing back at the regulation line where the competitors would be standing. I was frankly surprised just at how big the shooting park is and obviously how many people are involved in this, Dave. It seems like this is a really big activity in Anchorage, not only trap shooting, but also, as I learned, skeet shooting, which is a bit different, and sporting clays, which all done there at Birchwood. And there's different sites to do the sport all over Alaska. It's a really, really a major sport here in Alaska.
Yeah, that's correct. We have about 300 folks statewide that compete in trap shooting off and on, from all the way from Ketchikan to Fairbanks, and trap shooting has been in Alaska for more years than most people realize. I happen to run across some pictures in the Nome Museum of a trap shoot that was held in Nome about 1919. They referred to it as the Midnight Sun Shoot, which was a revelation to me, because the Fairbanks Trap Club has had a Midnight Sun Trap Shoot for years and years, and they thought they were the first, and it turned out they were not.
Yeah, it's a sport that's very old. It goes back probably to the beginning of sport shooting, and originally we call them clay pigeons because they originally were real pigeons.
They're called, in fact, the Remington targets for many years were called Blue Rock targets, after the Blue Rock pigeon, which was the pigeon they used to use when they shot live birds back in the prior to the turn of the century.
Hmm. Wow. So, Jen, you were saying that you are, compared to Dave, you're a relatively recent convert, or should we say addict. What got you hooked? What was it about this sport that really made you want to keep at it?
I think it's the instant gratification. I love fireworks. Mm-hmm. So when you shoot a gun and you shoot a clay pigeon and it breaks into a million pieces, it's like fireworks.
And you immediately want to do it again.
Correct.
Like fireworks or like eating potato chips.
Well, what's more fun than making noise and breaking stuff?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I definitely perceived that you know, it's the thrill of shooting, but then it's much increased when you're shooting at something that's moving and there's this dynamic aspect to it.
The sport's also got a lot of camaraderie to it. Although there's a lot of people who are competitive, there's this camaraderie, there's this sportsmanship that I haven't seen in other sports that you see in trap. I don't care if you've got one of the best world champions, he's going to stop and give you a hand if you ask for it. Gun breaks on the line, somebody you don't know may hand you their gun and say, go finish. Mm-hmm. It's just that camaraderie on top of the competitiveness is something I think that's unique to the trap.
Mm-hmm. Now let's give a little bit of a primer for those who know nothing about this except what they've seen, like in a James Bond movie or something. And we've got a video Kristen, is it on the Facebook or on the website? It's on Facebook. So go to Facebook, Outdoor Explorer, and you'll see a video of me having my first lesson with Dave. There's a machine that's shooting these little discs up into the air and is shooting them basically away from the person with the gun, either straight away or at an angle. And so you say pull and it off goes the disc and you're trying to you know, break it in the air before it lands. And then in competition, it's really a matter of who gets the most out of 75 or out of 100.
Correct.
And then the difference with skeet shooting is it's essentially, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's the same kind of disc, but it's going more at an angle across your vision.
The targets are identical in both sports. The essential difference is in trap shooting, you're shooting a going away rising target, which appears within a 34-degree arc, anywhere within that arc. So you really don't know where the target's going when you call for it. In skeet shooting, there's two houses, a high house and a low house. They throw a target across a stake in the middle of the field, and the targets go the same place every time.
Right.
So they're, you know, or at least they're supposed to. the targets are closer. I mean, in trap, typically a trap target is broken at about 30 or 35 yards. Skeet targets are broken within about 22 yards. So there's a significant difference in distance in the game, and you're shooting, always shooting the you know, with skeet, you're shooting at the same target, going the same place every time.
And one thing that I realized very quickly, and you can see this from the video, actually the video is available both on the website and on Facebook. So the website is alaskapublic.org. And in fact, there's tons of stuff you can learn there about the sport and links to the Alaska State Amateur Trap Shooting Association and to the Birchwood Shooting Park, and also some other information. And then you can see me not making a total fool of myself, but learning how to do this from Dave. One really interesting thing about this, which is that the reaction time is very quick, but you also have to be smooth and relaxed. It's as Dave was telling me, if you're tense and you're sort of keyed up waiting for that thing to go, then you're probably going to miss it. But also, if you wait too long, you're also going to miss it because it's just a matter of a second or two.
Yeah, the target leaves in trap shooting, the target leaves the house at about 42 miles an hour, and it flies 50 yards.
And it's going away from you.
And it's going away from you. So. So you want to break it while it's still on the rise, if at all possible.
Did you find that was a challenge when you're learning to do this, Jen, is having that quick reaction time?
No, I think trap is one of the easiest of the shotgun sports to learn. Probably one of the hardest to master because of that patience and the intricacies of it. But it's really a good place to start for shotgunning because the basics of the game are pretty easy. Once you get your basics down, then it's about learning how to concentrate, watch for the bird. It's just, you have to keep your eyes on that clay pigeon, as we call it, the bird. You have to keep your eyes on that. And if you keep your eyes on it, you got a pretty good chance you're going to hit it.
There's some technique involved, too, about the best way to aim, or not aim, sorry, wrong word. Best way to sort of track that bird and to stay, you know.
The word you're looking for is point, Charles.
Point, right.
Your hold point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because you could very quickly see that if you could miss them all, if you're really sort of tensely trying to, you know, aim it and hit it, it's sort of like there's a flowing, sort of a little bit of zen to it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, you just have to relax, and it's about having fun. I mean, that's... The sport is about having fun, and if you're relaxed and you're having a good time, like we always say, even your worst day of trap shooting is better than your best day at work.
Right.
There's one of the sports psychologists that writes for one of the magazines refers to it as being in the zone, and you definitely know when you're in the zone.
Because those things are breaking one after another. Huh?
You'll never work harder than you do breaking a lousy score.
Yeah. I can see that's true with this more than most sports because additional effort isn't going to help. Yeah, it's somehow just getting into that zone. Yeah. So tell me about the competition. Women get 75?
No, that's in the international game.
Oh, okay. So how does it work here at Anchorage?
In the American style trap, which is what we shoot here, and what's shot across the country. And worldwide, actually. The competitions are usually based on 100 targets or a 200-target race, for instance.
Okay.
We shoot three disciplines, what's called singles, which is all shot from the 16-yard line. handicap, which is shot anywhere from the 18-yard line to the 27-yard line.
People, and those yards are away from the machine.
Away from, mm-hmm. you know, further away from the machine. And that, and the, you know, your handicap yardage is determined by past performance, so that you basically earn your way back to the 27-yard line or whatever yard line you happen to be mm-hmm. in. And the third discipline is doubles, which is again shot from the 16-yard line, and it's the only one where we always know where the target's going because it throws two targets at once, and you have to shoot both targets.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so, in a sense, there is a perfect score if you hit every single one.
There is indeed.
So how often does that happen?
In singles, it's not infrequent. It's not as common here because of conditions, you know, light conditions and a lot of different things play into it. One of our old managers, who is an All-American shooter, theory was the reason scores here are not as good as they are maybe in Phoenix, for instance, is that the angle of the light that we're dealing with, because the sun's never consistent where you're at, and so you typically, he believed that people miss red targets. And I think there's a lot to that. I mean, I know from past experience our best scores are always shot in a high overcast where you don't have that sun issue. At any rate, the you know, 100 straight or even 200 straight in singles is not that uncommon. 100 straight in handicap is very uncommon. Mm-hmm. It happens, you know, at the Grand American Trap Shoot, which is the big national world competition in August in Sparta, Illinois. You'll have as many as 2,000 or 3,000 shooters in one event, and if you have a couple of 100 straights, that's a lot. So it doesn't happen that often, and it doesn't happen that often doubles. And in fact, this year, Fairbanks shooter Wally Smith broke 100 straight in the doubles championship. It's the first time the state championship in doubles has been won with 100 straight.
Hmm.
In fact, it was only just a few years ago the first 100 straight in Alaska in doubles was shot. It's been done a few times since then, but
kind of like hitting, kind of like golfing a hole in one. It's
to some extent, yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, the fellow that broke the first 100 straight in doubles, a local shooter named Wayne Jensen, and it just happened to be we have every year in August we have what we call the Ironman doubles. We shoot 500 pair of doubles in one day. That's 1,000 targets in one day.
Wow, sore shoulder at the end of the day.
And he broke the first 100 straight, first registered 100 straight in Alaska on the 600 of the 1,000.
Wow.
So it was, I happened to be shooting with him, so it was amazing.
Huh. So are you at that level, Jen, or are you sort of more out there having fun?
Oh, no, I'm out there having fun. I'm one of those inconsistent shooters. I can go out and have a great day and, you know, shoot a 96 or a 97 or 98.
Wow.
And then I can go in and fall on my lips.
Uh-huh.
But I'm a pretty inconsistent shooter.
Do you know before you get started how well you're going to do?
No, I can start out really good and not end so well, or uh-huh. I can start real crummy and end great. So you never know who's going to show up to the line that day with me.
Is this the kind of thing where you've had kind of a rough day at work, there's a lot of stress in your shoulders, and you get out there and it just sort of goes away because you're doing something that is really fun and is just totally outside of, you know, outside of your worries?
Absolutely, because you have to concentrate on that little orange disc going up in the air. And so everything mm-hmm. kind of has to turn off, even if it's just for that few seconds. And it's relaxing. It's a great stress reliever. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And the competition pieces of it, to go on what Dave was saying, you've got these different yardages, but you also have different classifications. So the person who's just starting out isn't really necessarily going to be shooting against the person who shoots 100 straight. They've mm-hmm. got, you know, an A class or double A class and D class. So you kind of are handicapped to help balance and allow everybody to excel and work their way up the classification range and get a chance to win a trophy. We have subdivisions, ones for ladies, vets, juniors. So there's also different kinds of ways to get some recognition mm-hmm. as well, to motivate folks to come back out and get a little trophy or a little bit of recognition.
So are you on a team when you're doing that, or is it all individual?
It's all individual. for what we do here. I mean, the SETP and the 4-H kids, they shoot as teams for some of the state national shoots. But it's individual. But one of the nice things about the sport is, at least for me, I'm really only shooting against myself. I don't, the person next to me who's shooting, I want them to do well too. And actually, if they're doing really well, there's a higher likelihood I will do really well.
It kind of rubs off, yeah.
Because I can concentrate on mine, or I'm watching them and I want them to do better. So again, it's that camaraderie. I want to do my best score. If I shoot a 99 and I don't win a trophy and somebody else shoots 100, which I actually had happen the first time I shot a 99.
Really?
I was so excited for her. I had a great shoot. I didn't need a trophy. I just had a wonderful shoot, and I shot a 99, and life was good. I'd like to see that again.
Yeah, I think to build a little bit on what Jen is saying, that for me, what got me hooked on the sport is that throughout my working career, it was the one thing that I found that got me completely away from the job. I never, I go out to shoot, and I don't think about work. And that was a revelation to me. It's the only thing I ever found that did that for me.
And Dave's a retired state trooper, so I'm sure you had plenty to be thinking about, right?
Yeah, once or twice. So, but it's and Jen's right. You are competing more against yourself than the other folks. I mean, certainly everybody wants to win, but it is a you know you can come away thinking, gee, I didn't shoot a very good score, but I felt good about the way I was doing things, and not be unhappy.
The Outdoor Explorer, and our topic today is trap shooting. My name is Charles Wolforth. I have two guests in the studio. You're just hearing from Dave Kaiser. Jen Geary is also with me. They're both with the Alaska State Amateur Trap Shooting Association, and both out there at the Birchwood Park, which I guess is the only place in Anchorage to do it, right? Or is it?
There's some shooting at the Rabbit Creek facility. They don't have standard traps, but they do shoot a little sporting clays.
We haven't gotten into, I mean, we're developing all this interest probably in listeners, like, how do I try this? Who wants to take that one? How do you, you've never done it before. You're not a member of the club. Maybe you don't even have the right kind of gun. How do you get into this?
Well, if, you know, there's generally somebody at the club that's willing to, you know, during open hours that will get you started, get you pointed in the right direction. You know, if you want to go pursue it a little further, there's generally folks that'll give you some lessons, individual lessons. You know, for kids, you know, we do, I do a 4-H program where, you know, to get the kids started. And then, you know, I have five of those kids that have been through the program are shooting on the adult league. And we do have leagues. We have spring leagues and fall leagues, because we don't shoot in the winter. So the fall league starts in September and ends in February, and the spring league starts in February and ends in May. And we currently, and we just, this is the second week of the fall league, and we have, I think, 53 teams. So that's over 250 folks shooting 50 to 75 targets over three nights every week. So it's a pretty active, and it's all handicapped like a bowling league. So, you know, the least skillful team has as good a chance as the most skillful team.
Got you. So Jen, how does it work in terms of paying? I mean, do you just pay by the day, or do you have to join the club, or how does that work?
Well, when you first come out, if you, let's say you don't have a shotgun, you don't know anything about it, the club does allow you to rent a gun. They do sell shells. There is a daily fee. Need to have a member with you. Get some instruction. You can certainly contact anybody from the club ahead of time to say, I'm interested in trap.
And that website is on our website at alaskapublic.org.
Or the Alaska State ATA, if you're interested in trying to get somebody down there if trap is what you're interested in. And typically somebody can make sure that somebody's there to show you the ropes, give you some lessons, and try it. Starting out with what's going to fit with you. And they have the eye protection there. They have the ear protection there. Safety is still number one at the gun club, so know that you're going to be expected to follow those rules and have eye and ear protection. But that's the best way to start off. You don't have to have, I think there's a misconception that you have to have these fancy guns. If you've got a 12-gauge shotgun, that you're comfortable with and that you can handle with, and maybe you went duck hunting with it, or maybe you went pheasant or grouse hunting with it, you can certainly come out and
give it a try.
And give it a try with that, with something you're comfortable with. So it, you don't have to have a whole lot of special equipment to come out and try it and see if you like it. Borrow one of the guns or rent one of the guns from the club and see how it works.
Mm-hmm. You know, I noticed as we were trying this out on Tuesday that the shotgun has a very long barrel, and I don't know if it's a different shotgun than you know, you would just sort of have for bear protection or to go shooting ptarmigan or what.
Well, over the years, that, you know, the equipment has changed. You know, for instance, in the skeet game, when I first started, you know, a 26-inch barrel was kind of the standard, and now guys are shooting 30 and 32-inch barrels. In the trap game, you know, with a break-open shotgun, 34-inch is pretty much a standard single barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And with the over and under, it's 30 or 32-inch. The gun that you were shooting was a Winchester Super X, and had a, I think that one has a 26-inch barrel. But with on a long action gun like an autoloader, that sticks it out there a long way.
There you go, right.
But it's all a matter of smoothness, if you think about it a little bit. If you take a broomstick that's 18 inches long and whip it around, you know, you take one that's 3 feet long and you naturally move it a little smoother. You know, and you know, a short gun is easy to stop, long gun, the weight, you know, helps you swing through the target.
Oh, I was assuming it was because it would shoot straighter or something, but no, it's about the way that it interacts with the shooter.
It's about the balance and the way the gun moves when you're shooting.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So how much does a good shotgun for competition cost? I mean, are they
300 to 300,000?
Yeah, I mean, there really is no upper limit.
Right.
I think on the lower end, for, you know, the big thing, you know, and people will ask me, well, what's the difference between my, you know, my 870 that I shoot, you know, Remington 870 that I hunt ducks with, and your Prozzi, which is what I happen to shoot. The big difference is reliability. You know, and you know, over the course of a year, we shoot more targets than the average hunting gun will shoot in a lifetime.
Right.
I mean, I shoot anywhere from 10 to 25,000 targets a year.
Wow.
You know, my shotgun, the shotgun I'm currently shooting, I've had since 2004, has probably had 250,000 rounds through it. And the average hunting shotgun won't see two boxes of shells in a season.
No.
So, you know, the target grade, if you want, if you will, guns just are more reliable over time than the less expensive shotguns.
Lots
of good scores are shot with 870s. There was a fellow out of the East Coast by the name of Rudy Etchen who set lots of records with a Remington 870. Lots of good scores are shot with Remington 1100 autoloaders. You know, so you can get into the game, any of the games really, you know, $300 to $700 for a decent gun that's going to hold up, you know, and like I said earlier, on the other end of the scale, there's basically no limit. But once you get beyond a certain point, you're paying for engraving and inlays and, you know, fancy wood and all of that kind of thing.
Collector stuff. Yeah. What about you, Jen? What do you use?
I shoot a Krieghoff, a K80. I shot an autoloader for a long time. I still have my Beretta autoloader, and finally graduated to an over and under, and waited a long time to get a Krieghoff. But I bought mine used, working on it. It's an interesting looking gun because I'm working to have the stock custom made, and that took years of building it, and it's got wood putty on it, and actually has duct tape on it. Right now. So those are things, but I've been doing it for 10 years. So the longer you do it in the competition, you tend to want to get your gun so it fits just you. You tend to work up to something that you're going to have a lifetime. The differences in the guns, like I said, my first one I still shoot skeet with is a $400 Browning. I still love that gun. I shoot sporting clays with it. I shoot skeet with it. So it really doesn't matter what the cost of the gun is. If you're comfortable with it, if it fits you.
If you hit the target.
If you hit the target, the bottom line is that's what it's really about. And then if you want to upgrade, that's an option.
I had a friend that used to say it wouldn't make any difference if it's a chicken-grade Mossberg engraved with a 10-penny nail If it fits you and you can shoot it, it's fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, this is always an interesting discussion on this show because when I bring the real experts in any sport in, they always say that, you know, it's about the athlete, you know, it's not about the equipment. And
it's very seldom the arrow. It's almost always the Indian.
That's right. We were talking about bike racing with some top bike racers, and they were saying, "Yeah, we know somebody who pulled a bike out of the dumpster and won the race." And I said, "Yeah, maybe, but that wouldn't be me, right? I think I'd like the advantage of a good bike." Well, this is a great conversation. We're talking about trap shooting today on Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. My guests are Jen Geary and Dave Kaiser with the Alaska State Amateur Trap Shooting Association. And we're going to be talking much more on this topic in the second half, finding out about Anchorage's own Olympic medalist in this sport, who Dave helped get started in the sport, and much more. Now it's time for the Outdoor Explorer calendar. The 2013 Arctic Cyclocross Series continues this Saturday at Chugiak High School and next Saturday at Buttress Park. Cyclocross courses are 1.5 to 2-mile circuits. They incorporate pavement, grass, mud, run-ups, and barriers. After the 5-race series wraps up next weekend, the Arctic Cyclocross Championship will be held on Friday, October 11th and Saturday, October 12th in Anchorage. Spectators are welcome. For more info on the Arctic Cyclocross, go to arcticcross.org. Also coming up in October, two gear swaps that you won't want to miss. The annual Alaska Ski and Winter Gear Swap will be held at West High School in Anchorage on Saturday, October 19, from noon to 5 p.m. You can sign up now to sell equipment and find more info on what's available to buy at akskiswap.com. That's a tongue twister, akskiswap.com. Also on Saturday, October 19th, the community of Girdwood is hosting an all-sports swap at the Alyeska Day Lodge from noon to 5 p.m. Gear drop-off is from 9 to 11 a.m. Bring your high-quality youth sporting equipment to sell and pick up the gear you need for the upcoming snow season. For more information on the all-sports swap in Girdwood, go to alyeskaresort.com/calendar. Finally, the MCA Ice Climbing Festival is happening this weekend at the Matanuska Glacier. To tell us a little bit more about this annual event, we have with us by phone Mountaineering Club of Alaska President and Ice Fest Coordinator, Jamie Mack. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, Charles.
Thanks so much for being with us. Now, tell us what an ice climbing festival is. I understand it has ice climbing, but is it a competition? Is it just a friendly gathering? What is it exactly?
So Mountaineering Club is a 501c7, so we promote educating people in the sport of mountaineering, but we also do other sports, including ice climbing, and that's what this weekend's all about. It's an instructional weekend, so we're teaching people the methods of ice climbing, how to build anchors, how to manage the ropes, how to safely climb, and of course, we're also promoting the social aspect of climbing ice. As you may know, there's a lot of frozen waterfalls in Alaska, so it's a great way to get outside in the winter and have a good time. We have about 125 people that signed up this weekend to come out and learn how to climb ice, so it should be a lot of fun.
And I guess the signups are already full?
They are, yeah. We usually close the signups a week before the event actually runs, and but we do have the event every year as an annual event, so for sure people could save the dates for next year, 2014, and we pretty much always run the event the last weekend in September.
Now, what's it like up there? Is it rainy? I mean, I suppose it could be sunny, but it seems like it's always rainy around here. Or is it snowy?
An interesting note about the venue that we use, the Matanuska Glacier, it seems to have its own little weather pattern over it. So a lot of times it'll be kind of yucky and rainy in Anchorage or Valley area, and then it'll be really nice on the glacier. So right now the forecast is for sunshine and only like maybe a small chance of some snow in the evening. So we're pretty psyched about the weather because, as you can imagine, it would be a bummer to have crummy weather for the event.
Yeah, really. So you must have a lot of instructors to be handling that many newbies or new, you know, folks who haven't done it before.
Yeah, we do. We use all of our instructors are volunteers. No one's paid for any of this. They're doing it with the kindness of their heart and for the love of sports. And I have about 24 instructors. We try to have a ratio of one instructor for every four students. So what we do is we break up all the students into small groups of about eight people at most, and then two instructors. And then we also have some additional volunteers beyond the instructors. We solicit the expertise of the 212th Para-S unit, the PJs, and they act as our medical staff in the event we have any sort of medical issues that arise, whether it's injury or just illness. And then I have some other volunteers that are not actually instructing, but they're just running around making sure everything goes smoothly and coordinated and is well managed.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested in if you screen the folks, because it seems like if you don't have a certain amount of physical ability, upper body strength, agility, maybe ice climbing isn't the best sport for you, or would you say it's anybody can do it?
You'd be pretty surprised, actually. The youngest that I've taught at this specific event was 13 years old. And, you know, kids, they're like rubber. They're like flexible. Mm-hmm. They have no fear most of the time. So with some proper instruction, we can usually steer them in the right direction. And then the oldest that we've had out at the event as a student has been 65 years old. And I have also had students that have had various health ailments over the years that are recuperating or managing lifelong illnesses, and they actually do really well. So you don't, some people think about climbing, and especially ice climbing, they think about, man, I got to be able to do pull-ups and I need all this upper body bicep strength. And that's not necessarily true. I find most people with proper instruction and just technique actually do really well and take to the sport. Now, there's a whole separate issue of those out there that don't enjoy the wintertime pursuits, right, when it's cold out. So some people decide the sport's not for them. But I certainly encourage everyone to at least try it once, and they can always decide they don't like it.
Yeah, so. Yeah. People who don't like doing anything outdoors in the winter, I always wonder if they're living in the right state. They might have...
Exactly. Yeah. And especially, it's, you know, for me, I've been ice climbing about 15 years now, and it's a great way for me to get outside when it's dark and when it's cold. And once I got the proper gear and the proper instruction, I actually found the sport to be quite comfortable. It really is not miserable like some people might think it could be, potentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So this sounds like a great event. We do have a link to the MCA Ice Climbing Festival on our website at Outdoor Explorer at alaskapublic.org. And thanks very much, Jamie Mack from the Mountaineering School of Alaska, for being with us.
Great. Thanks, Charles. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you this afternoon.
You bet. All right. Stay with us for the second half of the show. We'll continue to talk about trap shooting with Jen Geary and Dave Kaiser from the Alaska State Amateur Trap Shooting Association when Outdoor Explorer continues.
You are listening to Outdoor Explorer from KSKA Anchorage. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and iTunes. To see what's coming up on future programs and add your voice to the conversation, go to alaskapublic.org.
Back. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and we're talking today about trap shooting, which I got to try for the first time this week, courtesy of one of my guests and the Amateur Trap Shooting Association and went out to the site in Birchwood, which is pretty easy to find. And I found that this is really fun and really just a great hand-eye coordination thing, but also a great thing where you sort of getting inside yourself and figuring out, well, how am I going to calm down and be smooth and steady and actually hit this flying disc? So what happens is you stand in a sort of a what is it? It's not called a stadium. It's called a what is that semicircular area called?
Trap field.
Okay, and then there's a machine behind a wall that shoots these discs away from you, and you're trying to shoot that disc with a shotgun before it goes off into the distance and crashes into the bushes. And we were talking before the break just about the enormous numbers of shells that you guys shoot as you get better and better at this and as you compete. And I know I've got two guests, Jen Geary and Dave Kaiser, who are both real enthusiasts for the sport. And Dave, you've been doing it for a long time and have taught a lot of people to do it. And one of the folks you taught was Corey Cogdell, who won the national championship, also went to the Olympics, won a medal, and I guess she's off at international competition now and is sort of a full-time shooter.
Yeah, she's on the USA shooting trap team. She won the bronze medal in Beijing in 2004. She competed in London at the most recent games. She won a gold medal in an international competition in Tucson. She won a bronze medal recently in Granada, Spain, after tying the world record in the qualifier, running 75x75.
Wow! But
she started as a 14-year-old in the 4-H program here at Birchwood.
And it's neat to see her picture. Things about her plastered all over the clubhouse there. And obviously there's a lot of pride in her and what she's done, and beautiful young woman too, who really is a good representative for the sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in 2003 we went to a junior Olympic development camp at the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs, which was her first exposure to the international game, and that kind of wet her whistle, if you will. Mm-hmm. And after she graduated from high school, she decided that she wanted to try to pursue the international game. She moved temporarily to Texas to train, where there's Olympic bunkers, and then eventually became a resident athlete at the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs, which she still is. Mm-hmm. She has competed literally all over the world and done really well. I think her first win. She won a bronze medal in the Pan American Games. Mm-hmm. So
it must feel good to have been somebody helped launch her on that path.
It was, but you know, I don't take any real credit for it. I mean, she much of what she's done, you know, by dint of very hard work and dedication to the game.
Mm-hmm. Now you start kids out at about 11 years old.
I have taught younger kids, but it's generally a physical and mental maturity issue.
Mm-hmm.
Kids younger than 11, you know, typically do not have the upper body strength necessary, and they just get frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Even 11 years, even some 11-year-olds, I had them in the first class, and I'll go to the parents and the kid and say, you need to lay off and come back in a year, and I give them some exercises to do. And if they do that when they come back, they are generally successful.
Mm-hmm. What's the key to teaching a kid to do this sport, which is fairly demanding in terms of concentration and just it's not easy by any means?
Well, you take them into it in baby steps, you know, one thing at a time from the typical teaching paradigm, you know, from the known to the unknown and progression like that. And the 4-H program has developed a system of teaching which has been successful over the years and continues to be successful. The 4-H shooting sports have been in existence for more than 20 years and all over the country. It's probably one of the least known activities in 4-H, but lots and lots of activity There's literally hundreds of kids, for instance, in Texas that do it and have a great big state shoot in Texas every year. Mm-hmm. And
how many do you have going through your program here?
I'll generally run a couple of classes a year and anywhere from 8 to 12 kids in each of the classes.
And people will find out about that just by going to your website and
we send out mass emails to members of the club saying we're getting ready to gin one up and we take the signups. A lot of the kids, some of the kids, come out and do the program and we don't see them again, and that's fine. They have a positive attitude towards the game and towards shooting sports. Some of the kids go on like Corey did to compete. We've had kids. We had one young lady who went through the program a couple of years after Corey did, who one year carried the second highest handicap average in the nation.
Wow.
She won the lady title in the Grand American Handicap at the Grand American. She and her sister both were very competitive. And the ironic part of that is they got into it because their brother wanted to learn to shoot. Hmm. And they soon outpaced him, and he went on to other things.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I'm interested, and I'd like to hear from both of you, Jen, you as well, about your theories about why Alaskans would be exceptionally good. I mean, obviously, we have sort of a gun culture here in Alaska. Most people do have a gun. It's kind of the same as Nordic skiing. We have a four-hour population size. We produce way more successful national and international athletes in this sport than you would expect by just a per capita.
True.
Is that, do you think we have more people competing in it here? Is it because we just have that sort of acceptance of guns and shooting sports, or do you have a feel for it?
I think part of it's the culture here. You have to be more like the outdoors. Why would you live in Alaska if you don't like the outdoors? Whether it's Nordic skiing or trap shooting, it's something that gets you outside. We shoot in all weather.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's the only time we really close it down is if it gets too cold and we're worried about the trap machines.
Mm-hmm.
10, 20 below, then we might shut her down, but under the lights. So I think part of that is that just that people want to get out, they want to enjoy something, and trap shooting is just another way to get outside, enjoy the Alaska view. The view from the trap club, as you might have seen,
it's gorgeous. Yeah,
is one of the most beautiful places in the world, because you can, on a clear day, you're looking out across the trap field and you're looking straight at Mount McKinley and 4 Acre. And
if you went over that berm, you'd be in the water, right?
Yeah,
right.
In the Cook Inlet.
Yeah,
that's the inlet.
And so yeah.
It's. I think that's part of why you see the competitiveness here too, is because that's just the type of people that enjoy our state.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one other thing both sports seem to have is a really strong community of people who are excited and interested in it and contributing to it. And your club seems to be very, very active and have a lot going on all the time.
It's a very eclectic crowd, too. And I think that's what's also nice, is there's no certain age group. Everybody's shooting from, from 14 to 80. And whether every walk of life, every economic, socioeconomic background, it just doesn't matter, because once you walk out on that line, you're all equal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's and I think too, it's an individual game, and we have competitors from 9 to on up. In fact, a couple of years ago, there was a past president of the Amateur Trap Shooting Association by the name Earl Tolliver from Indiana, and Earl, at the age of 93, broke a 93 in the Grand American Handicap, which was
wow.
It gives me something to look forward to, I guess.
Uh-huh.
But we have competitors. One of the fellows that I shoot with all the time will be 80 in less than a month. In fact, he's off right now to shoot the World Skeet Shoot in San Antonio. And we have from the young kids on up to the old guys, and everybody shoots against everybody else. And and so I think the other thing is, a lot of people, it's been my experience, a lot of folks start to get into it because they want to improve their bird hunting.
Right.
They want to improve their skill level at at ducks or pheasants mm-hmm. or whatever. They're, you know, every year about this time, I'll get a half a dozen calls from guys. I'm going to South Dakota pheasant hunt, and I can't hit the broadside of a barn. Can you help me?
Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah.
And they get out and they get hooked on it, and pretty soon they're shooting, you know, on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. The 250 or 300 folks a week who shoot the leagues, a lot of them never shoot competition. Probably, I think somewhere around 5% of those folks graduate into where they're shooting, where they shoot competitively. The rest of them treat it like a bowling league. They go out once a week and shoot with their buddies and have some mm-hmm. pizza and beer afterwards, and that's, you know, and that's all they want to do, and that's fine, you know. And the way the leagues at Birchwood are structured, you can shoot trap, skeet, sporting clays, you can shoot mm-hmm. all the games and have fun with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm interested in how that links up with hunting. We did a duck hunting show a few weeks ago, and one of the pieces of advice these expert duck hunters gave us was get out to the range and shoot some clay pigeons before you go duck hunting, just to sort of get back in the
get
groove.
Get your eye back.
Yeah. So do you think that most folks who are doing this are also hunters, or?
I don't know that most, a lot of them are. Mm-hmm. A lot of them. It always amazed me. I try to go to South Dakota once in a while to hunt pheasants. That's one of my things I enjoy mm-hmm. doing a lot. And the number of people that show up there and spend thousands of dollars to go to South Dakota and never pick up a shotgun except while they're there, and they literally can't hit the broadside of a barn. You know, and why you wouldn't want to, you know, uh-huh. be skillful at what you're going to do is beyond me. But one of the ladies that shot with Jen last year on a league, that's how she got started. She was going, she and her husband had won a trip to Mexico to hunt doves, and mm-hmm. she wanted to learn, you know, so she spent several hours with me, and, you know, over the course of a couple of months before they went, and she went down and outshot her husband, and she was very happy about mm-hmm. that.
Do you hunt, Jen?
Actually, I'm the ultimate hypocrite. I don't hunt. I love to go hunting. I love to watch the dogs work. I love cooking and eating wild bird. Love pheasant or chucker. But however, I can't pull the trigger on a bird.
Really?
Not on a live one that's actually flapping. Those orange ones explode, and it's really fun. So I just love the sport. I love the shooting. I love that instant gratification. Now, my husband does hunt. I'll be actually going to South Dakota with him to pheasant hunting, and I'll uh-huh. be shooting them with a camera and watching the dogs and running the cornrows for them. So
non-vegetarian who doesn't want to shoot any birds.
I say I'm kind of that ultimate little hypocrite.
Okay.
I think everybody should go hunting as long as you eat what you kill, and I just can't kill it.
Okay, well, fair enough. Everybody's got their own thing. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. We're talking about trap shooting today with Jen Geary and Dave Kaiser from the Alaska State Amateur Trap Shooting Association. Jen, you've got some big events coming up.
Yeah, on October 5th and 6th happens to be the National Trap Shooting Association day. We've got a registered shoot there at Birchwood on the 5th and 6th. It's a great time to come out and maybe observe and take a look of how a competition runs. Everybody's certainly invited to come out and take a look and see how it is, ask questions, talk to the other shooters. I think that sometimes people are kind of afraid to get into a competition. And if you've practiced and you kind of know the game, and actually going to one of the competitions is really just a great practice as well. Mm-hmm. Once you've got your basics down and you know the game, have a couple lessons, come on out and sign up for one of our shoots. Mm-hmm. Now, we'll have monthly shoots after that are registered that people mm-hmm. are more than welcome to see. They'll be on the website and on the emails that go out. But the National Trap Shooting Day, that's all over the country. They will be holding on the 5th and 6th, and I think in early October around the country to recognize trap shooting.
Once you reach a certain level, improving is a matter of lead down the barrel. I mean,
how much practice is
getting out there and shooting. I mean, you mm-hmm. can only, you know, folks who come out and shoot 25 or 50 targets in, you know, a week are not going to improve very fast. But you come out and get, you know, shoot more, the more you shoot, the better you're going to get.
So how many hours would a serious, you know, somebody who's not necessarily international competitor, but somebody who really wants to be good at it, how many hours a week would they put into it?
Boy, that's hard to say. You know, I, you know, I, I probably spend as much time out there as anybody does. Mm-hmm. I've got a kids team on Tuesday night, and then I mm-hmm. shoot on a team on Wednesday and Thursday night, and I shoot all the registered trap shoots and run them. You know, I cashier them, and then I shoot most of the skeet shoots. So,
wow.
I mean,
yeah.
It's, yeah.
You live there. So does it get very expensive, though? I mean, all that ammo that you're shooting.
I have to admit, it's not a cheap sport. Mm-hmm. I mean, depending on how much you shoot, and, most of us who shoot much reload because it helps keep the expense down a little bit, and you can tailor your loads to what you need a bit.
So you're talking about loading your own shells?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even know about that. How do you do that?
Well, you take an empty shell and make it full.
Uh-huh. Do very carefully.
No, it takes a machine. It takes a reloader, and if you do it very much, use what's called a progressive loader for every cycle of the machine, a loaded shell drops out the back.
Hmm.
With the numbers of shells that you shoot competitively, you kind of got to go that route.
Mm-hmm.
If you shoot factory shells, you're going to spend a lot more money.
Yeah. So give people a sense of how much you'd pay for a box of shells if you're just going to buy them at the sporting goods store, as opposed to if you do your own loading.
Well, that's a tough question right now.
Depends on what you shoot.
Well, no, because over the past 8 to 10 months, the supply thing has been a real problem, and I think it's due in part because of the scare of the current national administration
gun control
thing. People are, as a result, I think there are people that are hoarding shells,
mm-hmm.
and they're hoarding components, and as a result, there's a scarcity of the commodity. And the shells have gotten a little more expensive. I mean, I can remember when I could buy a bag of shot for $8.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, the best price I can get is about $42 a bag for 25 pounds of shot.
A box of shells right now is going to run anywhere between $5.50 a box, which has got 25 mm-hmm. in it, to probably $7, depending on where you're getting it, what kind you're getting.
Premium shells, the best shells, are going to run you closer to $7.50 a box.
Right. So you're for just one outing, you're talking about $20-$30.
Yeah, you're looking at, if you go out and shoot 100 targets, you're looking at, about $6 a round for the targets, and then whatever you paid for the shells.
Mm-hmm.
So, 25 targets is going to run you $12-$15. I mean, that's just a fact of life.
Mm-hmm. The discs. When you say the targets, you mean the things that are shot, that are flat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you figure that just going out to a movie and supper anymore is going to drop $100.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, kind of have to put it into perspective, because mm-hmm. some say, it's really expensive, but then we need to stop and think, well, compared to what? If I go to a movie and I go to supper and I get some popcorn and soda pop, you're down $100 for just a couple hours. So you can go out to the range and spend a couple hours for less than $100.
It's about what you really want to do. Yeah, we had the same conversation when we were talking about flying and aviation. It's like, was it just a rich man's thing? Well, I guess in one way it is. But on the other hand, we're Alaskans, and it's what you really want to do, then you'll save up and do it. And same thing with some of the other things, even skiing, those lift tickets are expensive,
Very expensive. Snow machining. It takes a lot of gas to go out snow machining at $4 a gallon.
Yeah, that's true.
So.
Yeah, the bottom line is it's not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't suggest to anybody that it is,
mm-hmm.
but there are ways to economize by reloading or by, a couple of guys get together and buy a loader and like that. And a lot of folks do that.
Mm-hmm. And that cuts, does it cut your cost by half?
Oh, not by half. I think the last time I ran the numbers, I think it cost me a little less than $4 a box to load.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saving, over a premium, a box of premium shells, which is the only thing that would be equal to what I'm loading.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saving about half,
mm-hmm.
because a premium box of shells is going to run you $7.50, $7.75 a box.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm loading for $3.90 or something like that, depending on whether and that's the other thing. You could, one of the big expenses in loading today is, as I said earlier, is the cost of shot. Well, if you can, for practice, you can load less shot. You
mm-hmm.
can load a 1 ounce or a 7/8 ounce shot. And like in the skeet game, we shoot 410. That's a half ounce of shot. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of ways to economize.
And it's lead shot, right?
Pardon?
It's lead shot?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that there's a, I mean, I was very impressed with the site that you've got out there. It's big, and there's a lot of expensive equipment. And then I know there's sort of a landfill operation going on. Is that help paying for all of that?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Uh-huh. I mean,
because it seems like it would be really expensive to keep all that equipment going.
Well,
and
at last count, we have about 2,500 members.
Is that right?
And we've used some of the income from the landfill. It's a monofill. It's a mm-hmm. sanitary landfill, basically construction debris. Mm-hmm. We've used some of the income from that to improve the facility. I mean, and that's finite. I mean, obviously, you only have so many places to put stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know what you were seeing out there is we had the railroad brought in. I don't know how many truckloads of busted up railroad ties. I mean, mm-hmm. there was a mound of railroad ties, you know, 75 feet tall.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, all got mashed down and covered up. And that's basically what was going on when you were out there.
And it's, there's no government funding or anything. It's all a privately owned land, private operation.
Nonprofit.
Nonprofit.
Yeah. The land was originally a BLM grant.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the mid-50s.
Mm-hmm.
There's been something there, I think, back to about 1957.
Wow.
Prior to that, the back in about 52, there was the Sand Lake Anchorage Sportsmen's Association, mm-hmm. which was over on the shores of Sand Lake, mm-hmm. where if you drive down in there now, there's some high-dollar homes on Sportsman's Point.
Yeah.
That used to be a trap cover.
Really? I never knew that.
When I first started shooting, that's where I shot.
That's a good piece of Anchorage history. So we're just about out of time, but in terms of folks who want to come out and try it, they can come out and pay a daily fee.
Yeah.
And then what does it cost to be a member of the club? Is that...
There's two levels of membership. Mm-hmm. There's what's called an EPM member, an exclusive park member. And an exclusive park member pays reduced fees. If he shoots on the rifle and pistol range, he doesn't pay a daily fee.
Mm-hmm.
He also has access to the park when the park is closed, generally closed between 10 o'clock in the morning and 10 o'clock in the evening, or 8 o'clock in the morning, I forget mm-hmm. which. And there's a general member who can come out and still shoots at, you know, some reduced cost, but has to pay a daily fee on the rifle and pistol range, and plays more for a round of trap, for instance.
Right. And you still have to pay, in addition, you still have to pay for your own targets and ammo. And
yeah,
all that,
absolutely.
Of course.
Absolutely.
Right.
And we have reduced membership and reduced fees for folks over 62 mm-hmm. and for active duty military and juniors.
Right. And that would all be on the website, which you can find at alaskapublic.org, where we'll be talking about our show. You can see a video of Dave teaching me how to do this. Hopefully it's not too embarrassing. At least I know it's not embarrassing for Dave. I want to thank both of you, Dave Kaiser and Jen Geary, kind enough to show me how to do trap shooting and to come in for today's show. And earlier we heard from Jamie Mack of the Mountaineering School of Alaska talking about the MCA Ice Climbing Festival. Next week on Outdoor Explorer, our topic is disc golf. It's become so popular that at least one of the courses was overrun by too many people. We'll have expert disc golfers to talk about this surprisingly complex sport in their Alaskan community of competitors. Post your questions and comments on disc golf on the Outdoor Explorer Facebook page, and we'll include them on next week's show. Thanks for joining us on Outdoor Explorer. Our producer is Kristen Platt, and I'm your host, Charles Woolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Outdoor Explorer and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.